Welcome to the penultimate episode of Inside Fighting with me, Chris Lloyd, together with 32 Red. For the past 2 months, we've followed the progress of Carl Frampton with unprecedented access to his training camp, to those around him, and to his family ahead of his bid to become a three-weight world champion against the American Jermell Herring. Now, of course, you'll know by now that that didn't happen, as Jamie Moore threw in the towel with a minute and 15 seconds left in the sixth round. Moments later, Carl tearfully announced his retirement, leaving the ring for the final time with a record of 28 wins, including 16 knockouts and just 3 defeats, all of them in world title fights. His career has been littered with glorious moments, none bigger than at the Barclays Center in 2016, where he took down the Mexican champion Leo Santa Cruz to win the WBA Featherweight Championship of the World, cheered on by thousands of you who travelled yet again to support him. But the time has come for him to do some work on the safe side of the rope. So what next, and how does he reflect on that final fight in Dubai? In his first interview since leaving the UAE, we'll tackle those questions, we'll look back on some of the great nights, and we'll assess his future. This is Inside Fighting.
Oh, another left hand. And surely this is too much. Frampton fighting back. Another huge left hand from Herring. Again working the body. Huge left hands. Big blows going in. Surely this is the end. And the towel comes in. And it's Jermell Herring, in the biggest fight of his life, who stops Carl Frampton. What a win that is for the American champion. And Carl Frampton's dream crumbles here in the desert.
So how are you, mate?
I'm okay. I'm all right. People keep asking me that, and a lot of people have sent me messages, this, you know, just checking in on me, see how I am. But I'm okay. I'm feeling okay. Good to be home. Good to be with Christine and the kids. Good to not really have to think about boxing anymore. People close to me, you knew, and my family and other people close to me knew that win, lose or draw, I was retiring after the Jermell Herring fight. So the plan was to win, obviously, and then retire, go out in a big win, three-weight world champion. What a fantastic ending that would have been. But so it's not as if I just lost a fight and I'm now coming to terms with retirement, because I was going to do it anyway. I didn't get the result I wanted, but yeah, just is what it is.
I just feel like it would have been nice for you to have at least bowed out to a crowd. You know, when you're doing your speech, it was obviously very emotional and very hard to watch. But I was thinking you just might have had a bit more closure if you'd have had, you know, a few thousand.
Listen, there, you know. I suppose it would have, but there's nothing we can really do about it on the current circumstances. And I was lucky to get a couple of fights in during the pandemic and get paid as a boxer. It's my job, it's what I do. So a lot of people aren't having the privilege of being able to work for a living as boxers because there's no fights. So I've been very lucky, and, you know, credit to MTK and Top Rank and Queensbury and everybody involved and get me this fight. I would have loved to have won it. And I had a brilliant camp. I sparred brilliantly. All my sparring partners were confident that I was going to win this fight. But there's a big difference between sparring and fighting, isn't there? You know, when you've got a head guard and bigger gloves and stuff on. And I just feel like I'm a reactive fighter. Like I'm someone, you know, because of my stature and I'm short, I need to be able to evade shots and get close to them and get out of range. And my timing and my reactions have slowed down. And that's the difference at the very high end of sport. And I don't want to be disrespectful to Jermell Herring. He fought the perfect fight. It was a very good performance from him. But I don't think he had a particularly fast jab or anything. I just couldn't get out of the road of it. And that's when it's time to get out. I spoke to someone as well. I was speaking to someone about it, about the fight. I have no recollection at all of getting knocked down the second time. None whatsoever. It's a bit worrying, that, isn't it? Someone was talking about, that uppercut that was landed and you went down pretty heavy. I was like, thought I just got stopped on my feet.
That was good head mover there from Frampton. He got nice and good
uppercut. Oh, huge uppercut. Again, caught square. Frampton down twice in two rounds. And he is badly hurt. Badly hurt again.
I mean, you and I had that conversation, didn't we? And I was amazed that you got up, if I'm honest, because you kind of fell back in slow motion. You'll see it. I'm guessing you haven't watched it back then.
No, it'll take me a while to watch it. You know, I don't think I maybe never will watch it. But yeah,
I just, we'll go back. We'll come onto that in a second. I wonder whether, you know, you had some very good spars with Dil Magani. And I mean, I saw you spar, so I know what you're saying is true, because I thought the same thing. You didn't look like you lost a step at all. He was aggressive. He was big. He was southpaw. Just got the impression with Herring, he wasn't taking the bait anywhere near as easily as you maybe needed him to. Like, you're trying to set those traps and trigger him, but he was actually, he never really fell over his front foot, never really gave you many openings to counter him.
No, it was a good performance. Like, when from Herring, when he won the first couple of rounds, and then I think it might have been, was it the fourth maybe I was winning, or the third, I'm not sure, but it was a round where he had the bad cut, and I had a good round and I won the round, and I started to just think, right, momentum's going to go in my favour now. This is a bad cut. And just as I'm thinking that, he puts me on my backside. And it's like, oh, fuck's sake, you know. But, it was a nasty cut. I have to give Jamel a lot of credit for how he dealt with it, because it was like the white of his eye, it was red with blood. Like, I don't know how he could see out it. It was literally right in his eyeball, the blood. So, but he kept composed and done a number on me. Credit to him and his team.
It was the first knockdown was an unbelievable shot. There was no telling it whatsoever. Even when you watch it back and you know it's coming, there's no, like, he doesn't change his feet position. He doesn't turn his hip. It literally just comes straight out. It's like the last thing you think he's going to do, and you walk straight onto it square.
Good body shot back there from Carl Frampton. Oh. Well, listen, Frampton's had to dig it up before, hasn't he? Good left hand there. Right hand, sorry, from Frampton.
Yeah, he's closing the gap. It's becoming attritional now. Body shot from Herring. Oh! Frampton goes down. Still just inside 2 minutes to go. Looks like he's fine. Bit of blood smeared across his face now. Takes the count. How badly hurt is Frampton?
Didn't see it. Didn't see it.
Yeah, you didn't look hugely hurt, just a little bit, maybe a little bit buzzed because it caught you unaware, but you had a good round apart from that, and then...
I was probably winning that round, then I got knocked down, and that's... It's just, things like that can happen in boxing, and it changes the whole momentum of things and how things are going, and it is what it is. I had a go, and, I'm glad, because I was very close to retiring after the Warrington fight, and I'm glad I kind of thought that I could win a world title. Still, again, and the Warrington fight was a bad performance, which it was, but I'm glad that I had that goal, and now I know that I just don't have it anymore, rather than, if I retired after Warrington, there's a chance you could have seen me making a comeback after 3 years, and it could have been even more of a disaster, you know, thinking about what if, so I just know, and that's it, that's me done.
How difficult were the conversations with Christine after Warrington? Because obviously I know she wanted you out.
Yeah, she did want me out, and I never really said that much because I always talked about people, you know, I spoke to my family and I wanted to continue on and I had their blessing and stuff. But Christine never really, she wanted me out probably before the Warrington fight even, if I'm being honest. But she definitely wanted me out after the Warrington fight. She didn't want me to continue boxing. I had a few fights after Warrington. I think she's happy that I'm retired now, to be honest. I think that she's already a bit concerned about how much I'm going to be around the house.
Pissing her off within 7 days of being home.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm trying my best not to. I really am. And I know I think sometimes I'm probably not the easiest person to live with in terms of, like, her standards are very high in terms of cleanliness. I'm a clean person as well, but I mean, like, she is fucking OCD with stuff. So I've been really on it. Like, I've been hanging around the dishwasher, flat out emptying it, putting stuff in, doing a bit of cooking, just making sure I'm trying my best, you know.
It's going to take a little while to get into your new life routine, isn't it?
Yeah. I've just signed the kids up to a football team, both of them. Carla starts tonight. Ross starts tomorrow. And I'm excited about that. That's a new little journey for me and the kids to go on, you know. And we just seen Northern Ireland ladies there qualify for the Euros as part-timers, a lot of them. And maybe this could be the start of an amazing journey like that for Carla. Who knows? You know what I mean? That's me. She flipped me. I'm putting a lot of pressure on them and saying stuff like that. But I'm just excited about the future for the kids, really, and us all.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, Christine has given up a lot to hold the fort and, you know, raise the kids at times solo when you've been out providing for the family. But I know she's got ambitions of her own because she's kind of put a lot on hold so that you could do what what you're going to do. How is it you're going to support her going forwards, and what are her ambitions?
Well, I want her to be involved in every decision, whatever we do as a family going forward. I'm very proud of the fan base and the loyal support that I've had, particularly from people from Northern Ireland. And I've had it from everywhere, really. Ireland, Northern Ireland, the UK, even as far as the States and stuff, people have supported me. But I want to give back, and I think we both do, me and Christine, want to give back a little bit to the people from here, particularly Northern Ireland. And we're seeing a lot of violence and trouble in the street at the minute, especially in working class areas. And I don't really know what shape or form it's going to be, some sort of a foundation probably, but I want to do something to help my people and the people that I owe so much to. And Christine wants to be involved in that as well. Like she put her, again, like you said, put her career on hold. She done a degree, worked very hard to get a degree in criminology, criminal justice. So she's a very generous person. She likes to help people, and she can be a real force in whatever we want to do together, me and her. We'll have opportunities.
Yeah. Have you had much time to sort of think about and reflect on your career? I know it's only been 10 days or whatever, but sort of look back and just thought about like the highs and lows?
Yeah, no, not really. I suppose, you know, I seen something there, someone saying something about, you know, I've had a good career, a career that I should be proud of, and I am proud of, but just didn't end the way I wanted to. But that happens. I'm not going to get too upset about it, and I'm already over it. And I think I'm over it because I knew I was going to retire anyway, but because of how nice people have been. People have been extremely nice, and some of the messages of support have been fantastic. But I've reflected a wee bit. I've seen someone say, some Kevin Byrne from the Irish Sun, I think, said I beat more world champions or former world champions than any other fighter from the island of Ireland. That's something to be proud of. I'm a two-weight world champion. I lost trying to become a three-weight. That's something to be proud of. You know, Ring Magazine, MBE, honorary doctorate.
Zoo Magazine, coolest man of the year.
I forgot that one. That's the big one. I'm proud of what I've done, and I've done more than I ever imagined I could have when I first turned professional.
Not an easy decision for Jamie Moore, although I think if you ever watch the fight back, you'll see it was the right one. I talked to him yesterday. He's still in isolation, by the way, isn't he, Jamie?
Mental. It's mental what's going on. Yeah. And they're being treated like scumbags. It's mental what's going on. It really is.
I was talking to Jamie, and obviously the last thing he wants to ever do is throw in a towel, because he knows you would finish on your feet if you physically could. But I think he made almost the perfect decision, because you were badly hurt.
Everyone's saying it. And I don't know, because I'd have fought on. I'd have continued to fight on. And that's what fighters do, you know. And I made a statement before and said that I would have to get dragged out of the ring. Literally, I'm not thinking about stopping at all. So it's important to have a trainer like Jamie Moore, who, although he probably didn't want to make that decision, it seems to have been the right choice. And I saw him doing it when Tommy Coyle fought Chris Algieri in Madison Square Gardens. Yeah. Tommy was angry and upset, but it was absolutely the right decision. And Tommy now knows it was the right decision. So obviously I can't remember much about it. I remember being on my feet, and I don't think it was in my head. I feel like I wasn't too out of it when the towel came in my head, but it seems that it was, because a lot of people are saying that it didn't look great. So right decision, of course.
Yeah. What did you guys, it's quite emotional conversations in the changing room. Do you remember much about like the after stuff?
Or yeah. Was it all I apologize to people. And they were saying, you know, we don't need to apologize. But I kind of got the team and my dad and Cooper McClure, my old amateur coach, I got them into my hotel room afterwards. And I just said a few words and thanked them all for everything they've done. I apologize that I couldn't win a world title with them. I think that, but this part of my career has been, it's been the best part, even though the previous part of my career was the big, big wins. But this has definitely been the best part. And I say that because mentally, I'm a much better person. And that's a win, really, isn't it? And I wish I had made the move with Jamie and Nigel long before it did. And no doubt if I was with them in that part of my career, I'd have had the exact same outcome.
I suppose out of the bad often comes the good. And obviously what happened with the McGuigans happened, and it's done now. But if it hadn't been for that occurring, you may have met Jamie and Nige, but you'd never have lifelong friends in the like you do.
No. And I have lifelong friends in Jamie and Nigel and Tommy Coyle and Martin Murray and Akib Fiaz, his brother Assam, Chantel Cameron, who was with me previously when I was with the McGuigans, but I've got to know her more so now, being with Jamie and stuff, Jack Catterall, Stevie Ward, obviously, Big Conrad Cummings, who moved as well. You know, I feel like I maybe missed a few out. Sean McGoldrick and Tyrson Kalakmet, new guy who just joined the gym. What a fighter he is. We watched it in the car on the way to my fight. And I remember just thinking, it was mad. When we left the hotel, I was on BBC World News. And I was like, great, that's a sign. Getting in the car, Tyrson nearly takes your man's head off. I'm just full of confidence that it's all going to happen. And then it didn't.
Yeah. I know you obviously spoke to Jamel in the ring afterwards, and he was obviously gracious as he would be. Did you speak to him or see him in the sort of 24 hours after?
I was in the airport, literally. I was flying. So I fought at local time, 1 a.m. I was on a plane at 7:30 a.m. So I went straight to the airport pretty much. I did see him in the hotel briefly, and we had a good chat, and I wished him well in the future and wished him well in future fights, and very, very gracious. A really genuinely a nice man, and I do wish him well.
And a good fighter, you know, because that was his career best performance. Let's not forget, it wasn't your finest hour, but I have to say, having watched his last four or five fights, that's the best he's ever fought. So,
yeah, you're looking at the Oquendo fight and stuff. You know what I mean? That was a performance 10 times better than that. And yeah, fair play to him, because I think if it had been an Oquendo performance, then I'd have won the fight. And I was expecting that's him now, you know, but he done what he had to do, and absolutely credit to him and fair play to him.
Yeah. So looking towards your future then, what do you want to do?
I don't know. I had a few interesting, well, I had one interesting call speaking with my agent, Ben, who you know well, and there's been a few interesting things have come up. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I want to spend a bit of time really with Christine, the kids at the start, not have to do too much really for the foreseeable. And then when I start to get on top of everybody and annoy people, then I'll start doing other things.
I've got a spare room here, so if it gets a bit much. It's a box room, but you're only little, so.
Massive room to me.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting what happens. And I feel like I'll have options.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the end of me.
Okay. I mean, I imagine you've had some approaches from boxing broadcasters already, but you're also looking at some slightly more mainstream stuff, I imagine, as well, aren't you?
There's been chats with different boxing broadcasters. Obviously, you know, punditry is something that I really enjoy doing, and I get decent feedback when I do it from people. And I always like to be really honest. And I think that in this day and age, you have a lot of people who like to say things that the person they're talking to wants to hear rather than speak the truth. I like to be honest, and some people like that, some people don't. But I'll always be honest, and I think that's something that people like with my punditry. So that could be an option in the future. And there's been other things, kind of more mainstream as well, that have potential there. So yeah, it's going to be good.
Okay, good stuff. And then without putting you on the spot, is there anybody you kind of want to say any sort of final thank yous to, who helped you over the career? I know it was you. You did actually an amazing tribute to Billy McKee, even though you were in the midst of probably a big headache and floods of tears. But to anyone just looking back, you want to just give a kind of nod to?
Well, yeah, I suppose everybody really who's helped me in some shape or form. And the problem is, you try to name everybody, but you'll be here all day. You know, there's people like Billy McKee and Cooper McClure, obviously, who I want to thank. Jimmy Moore, Nigel Travis as well. But there's been so many other people. There's people the first part of my career, guys like Darrell Richards, my strength and conditioning coach, who a lot of people won't know of, but he was my S&C guy. I still keep in touch with him from time to time when I was with the McGuigans, and he's a really nice guy. Things like people like him, I have to think. Steve Broughton, who has done great jobs with Joe Joyce, we've seen was involved a little bit. So many people, really. But the main one, really, for me, and I wanted to dedicate the fight, kind of the career. I wanted to speak about Billy, obviously, and thank him for everything he's done. And I was very, very emotional after the fight. And, you know, I'm still very sad that that he's no longer with us. But Christine has done so much really for me and the kids, and it's just she's an amazing person, really, really is. And I literally want to dedicate the rest of my life now to her and the kids, and have them as a priority, because for a time, and this sounds harsh, but for a time, especially in the first part of my career, some of the decisions I make were wrong, and they weren't. Boxing was a priority, and it shouldn't have been. It should never have been. Your family should always come first. And I've learned that with my Jamie and Nigel and everybody else in the gym, and they're so important to me, and I just want us all to be happy, mate. That's it.
Well, I was talking to a lot of people, obviously, in the last few days about you, and somebody said to kind of have achieved everything you have money in the bank, get out with your health intact, and be 34 with the vast majority of your life ahead of you, so many options, is a position that not only a very, very small percentage of boxers find themselves in at your age, but very few percentage of people in the world find themselves in.
That's why I'm lucky. I just had a similar conversation with Jamie Conlon, and he says pretty much word for word what you said, that I'm lucky in terms of what I achieved was beyond my wildest dreams. I own my own house. I've got a few quid, and I'm getting out with my faculties intact, I think, and opportunities and options. And not many people get that. If you're getting out of boxing with something, one of those things, you're doing well. So I understand that I'm in the very, 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 very small minority of people who are getting out of this hard, hard sport with opportunity and with money and with health.
Well, congratulations, mate.
Thank you very much.
Last question. Do you think there might come a point where you sort of miss the gym environment and you would get the itch to do any work on the other side?
No. I really don't. I genuinely don't. I like my time at home. You know, I like spending time with Christine and the kids. I like seeing my kids growing up, and I like being there for them. Training for me was a part of the job. I enjoyed the environment, and I enjoyed the camaraderie in the gym, but who wants to be killing themselves every day in the gym? I don't. My training regime from here on in will be maybe a couple of jogs every now and again, do a few weights, get dead hench. That's the next goal. I'm going to be an absolute beast.
So I hear.
Look at them arms, small midget arms.
And when you consider how fucking massive your head is as well. Yeah, that is wicked. Well, I'm looking forward to going on the journey with you. We've got some good stuff planned. It's going to be fun.
No, I'm looking forward. I'm excited about the future, mate. And I don't know, or just before you, I had another really interesting call about a potential, I wouldn't say work, but it's something that's, the opportunities are endless, I think. So I'll tell you about it off screen.
Looking forward to it, mate. Looking forward to it. All right, Sam. Well, I'm glad to see you in good spirits and looking well. You've not got a mark on you either. Healing powers of Wolverine.
No, I heal pretty quickly. That's always been a good trait of mine.
Your superpower. Yeah.
That and bruises go away quick, yeah.
That and mediocre singing, yeah.
Mediocre singing. I was doing a bit of singing around the house just before this.
Bet you're wondering how I knew about your plans to make me blue.
All right, cool. Oh well, maybe we'll do that for Inside Fighting at some point. Get Dave on the old guitar. Give you something to lean back on if it goes to pot, eh?
Yeah.
All right, son. Well, take care, mate. Good to speak to you, and I'll catch up with you in a few days.
See you, mate.
Nice one, boss. See you soon.
Oh, I heard it through the grapevine. And I'm just about to lose my mind.